The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, fourth day of January, 2013. The Dow is up 20 points. The S&P is up 4. Comp is up 3. Gold is down $30 on the session. Worst week in a year, I guess it is. And crude off 50 cents a barrel. The big news is about the big money. Have you heard the big news about the big money? All right, here's the big news about the big money. The big money is the trillion-dollar coin. Do you have one? Might want to check in your piggy bank. The hottest idea to save the economy from another debt ceiling fiasco is the trillion-dollar platinum coin. You actually may not have heard of this, but many have, and you're about to. Now, in order to understand how this works, we need a quick lesson in how the government spends money. All right, this is a very crude, quick version, but you'll get the gist. The Treasury Department has a bank account at the Federal Reserve, specifically the New York branch of the Federal Reserve. When the Treasury writes a check to a company, oh, say a defense contractor that they owe $100 million to, that check is cashed at the Fed. You can't cash that check at your local savings and loan. It's cashed at the Fed. When the Treasury needs money, which is all the time, it sells bonds in an auction. The proceeds of those bonds go into that account. Okay, so now that's how money goes in and that's how money goes out, right? Now, there's this thing called the debt ceiling, which sets a maximum cap on the amount of debt that the U.S. can carry at one time. Now, some people say that's a good thing, and other people say that's a silly thing. Well, every time we come close to hitting the debt ceiling, the U.S. has to ask Congress to raise their credit limit. In recent years, since the rise of the Tea Party, what used to be a mildly frustrating event has grown into a systemic economic threat. So, where does the trillion-dollar platinum coin fit in? Okay, glad you asked. In the section of the law which specifically relates to the Treasury's ability to create money, coins and bills, Section K says this. The Secretary may mint and issue platinum bullion coins and proof platinum coins in accordance with such specifications, designs, varieties, quantities, denominations, and inscriptions as the Secretary in the Secretary's discretion may prescribe from time to time. In other words, when it comes to platinum coins, the Secretary, who, in case anybody forgot, is Tim Geithner, who is about to step down from his job, but for the moment it's Tim, has discretion on the design, specification, quantities, and denominations of platinum coinage. In other words, Tim Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury, the law says he can mint platinum coins. So let's say Tim Geithner were to stamp out a trillion-dollar coin. What would that accomplish? The idea is that after it's created, Geithner, along with his security detail, would walk across the street to the Federal Reserve and deposit it in the Treasury's bank account. I know this sounds like science fiction, but it's not. Then the Treasury, rather than having to issue new debt, because remember, Congress hasn't raised the limit yet, then the Treasury, rather than having to issue new debt, can make sure its checks clear against this money. Remember, we just made a deposit of $1 trillion. Voila, crisis averted. Now that sounds nice, but a lot of folks don't think it's a great idea. There's a lot of objections. One is that it will cause massive hyperinflation. Another is that the trillion-dollar coin will destroy the dollar. Another is that, well, if this idea is really so good, then why not mint a $16 trillion coin and just wipe out our entire debt problem? Well, those are all three pretty good topics for discussion. The first one about massive hyperinflation, you know, the idea that we're creating money out of thin air to pay our debts brings to mind situations like Weimar and Zimbabwe, where trillion-dollar bills are being tossed around in the street and it takes a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread, etc. The thing you have to keep in mind is that this coin, it's not about using the coin to pay back our debts. It's about staying within the limits of the law while avoiding the technical debt ceiling. Think about the mechanics. The trillion-dollar coin goes to the Fed, but in terms of the real economy, government spending just continues to take place exactly as normal. Now, it is true that the Treasury might not be doing bond purchases at this time, and this could leave more money in the system that could heat up and cause inflation, but this is easily remedied because the Fed has a gigantic pile of treasuries it's sitting on that it could sell back into the open market to, quote-unquote, sterilize the government spending. The bottom line is, because the trillion-dollar coin isn't going to be used as helicopter money, in other words, money that is injected directly into the economy, it's only going into the bank account, you don't get the inflationary effects you're used to seeing when you hear about governments creating money in large denominations. This is a technical fix for a bad situation. Now, the argument about the trillion-dollar coin destroying the dollar, it's kind of like the first argument. What would destroy the dollar is if the government started to print trillion-dollar bills, declare them legal tender, and drop them from a helicopter, as Ben is known to do. Soon the buying power of a single dollar bill would be zero. But alas, the coin isn't a direct injection into the economy, but rather a stopgap that lets the government continue to spend on various services that they don't have the money for, but without the destructive effect. And the $16 trillion coin, it goes back to the point that the government is arguing that our debts are manageable at current levels. You go, well, wait a minute. Why do we have this deficit? Why do we have this problem if our debts are manageable? Well, they claim they are. And the only purpose of the trillion-dollar coin is to get around this debt ceiling issue. There's no point to the $16 trillion coin or the $100 trillion coin. This is not about having money to spend. This is about avoiding a legal crisis where the government had obligations to much but didn't have the authority to borrow and spend money. Now, if we actually did try to eliminate our debts by just creating a $16 trillion coin, we would create the inflation that I mentioned via a massive expansion of money, and it would result in buyers less inclined to buy dollar assets, those short-term treasury notes. So the trillion-dollar coin, it won't create hyperinflation, and it's not the solution to all our economic problems, but it will get us through the debt ceiling crisis in sort of a whimsical way. Is it silly? Yeah. But what's sillier is perhaps a rich nation having a debate on whether it will pay what it owes or not. So in the face of that, perhaps a little silly is required. So think about that. When you deposit your pocket change into your piggy bank tonight, a trillion-dollar coin, Tim Geithner has the power. He can do it. Boom. It's legal. All right, the chart in front of you is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. If you can't see the chart, go to the homepage of CFRN.net, and on the right-hand side of the page, under the radio tower, click the big red, white, and blue button. That will take you to a page that says Watch Live Now. Click that, and you'll fill out a short form, which will get you into the chart room so that you can see the charts, everything we're talking about during the show. You only have to register once every 2 weeks. Today's a Friday, so if you register today, you're going to be good through next Friday, okay? It's about a 30-second process. Now, if you prefer to just listen to the audio, you're in the right spot. If you want to come see the video as well, go through that process I just discussed, and it's pretty painless. All right, this is a daily chart. I want to show you the daily chart for a change because we got an interesting thing going on here. Let's put a trend line across the bottom first. Let's go from here right across there. We won't worry too much about getting it exactly perfect. Notice we have a gap here, and we have this gap here. Okay? Now I drew a trend line right across the bottoms there. We're going to make a copy of that trend line. We want it to be at the exact same angle. Okay. We're going to drag it down, and we got to find out where it fits. Does it fit there? Well, it touches. But let's come on down and see what we can find. Ooh. Now that's snug right there. Okay? See this and this? So what do we have? We have an ascending price channel. Have we ever had one of those before? Yes. We had one that we've had them since the inception of the markets. Let me get rid of that line. Let me back this up. Roll it over. Yeah, there we go. I guess we can get all the way back there. Going back to May 16th of last... Now, because we're on the new contract, you won't be able to see this perfectly well. Yeah, I'm going to have to leave that part out. But for those of you who remember, we had an ascending price channel that went from May 15th of last year all the way up to this point here, at which point it became a descending price channel, which I can show you. Okay. So I tell you about not worrying about getting it perfect. Trying to give you the general outline. So we had ascending price channel, then descending. Okay. Now we're back into an ascending, an upward price channel. Now here's where this channel gets interesting. Obviously, we're pressing right up against the top of it, right here. It's defined as a channel by three touches: one, two, three. That defines it. We've got a fourth and a fifth. Now we've got multiple touches here, so the channel is well defined by technical terms. Now we got to look left. Okay. Let's go as far left as we can go. Okay. So we're confident that these are the highest two highs that we have in recent history, in the past year. So let's do this. Let's take this trend line tool. Let's go right here to this top, drag it across that top. Let's just keep dragging it straight across, straight across, straight across. And look where we got. Look what we got. Look where we're at and what we got. There you go. Okay. So we have an ascending price channel. We're banging up against the top of the price channel. Okay, that's part one. Part two is, as we hit the top of this channel, we're putting in a triple top, boom, 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 on the daily chart. Okay, what does that mean? Well, it means that this is a significant area of resistance for two different reasons. Top of the channel and just flat out top of the market. And they're coming together in this area right here. Okay. And so with this kind of pressure, you know, you've got a bullish market pushing up from the bottom. You've got these guys overhead squashing it down. This could drag out for a while. We could pop out, pop back in, honor the channel. See, we could take out these highs right here and continue to walk right up here. Stay inside of the price channel while taking out these two highs. So I just want you to be aware that we're at an important intersection, crossroad in the markets. Keep an eye on this area. Let's see what happens. This gap here, you always hear the thing about, you know, gaps always get filled or whatever. You know, the next time somebody tells you they always get filled, you can just go, well, here's one that didn't, because they don't always get filled. Will this one get filled? I don't know. I'm not in the business of predicting the future. We'll have to wait it out and see what happens. But we know what we've got overhead. We know where the pressure is. So we have to just deal with that for now. We'll watch and see what happens. Price wants to get through there. It wants to take it out. We'll just have to be patient over the next few days. If we go to this old daily chart here, on this one, you can see that ascending channel that we had going up for so long. Then as we walked it back down, broke out of the bottom, popped right back up. See how we walked up this line? Came down, hit this line. Now we're sitting right up here. Remember, this is where the market turned. We climbed for 6 months into September the 14th. We climbed for 6 months. And on September the 14th, that was the day it turned. Came back up on October the 5th, put in a slightly lower high. And then we traded down all the way into the low November 16th, where it then turned, headed back up. And we're right back up to the same spot. So, I always walk you through the hourly. I thought today I would give it to you from a daily perspective. The markets are fractal in nature. We talked a lot about that in the partners meeting last night. So for those of you who are in that meeting, or those of you who missed it and you're going out to watch the video today in the members area, keep in mind that discussion we had at the end about the markets being fractal in nature and how we took just weird time frames, just random numbers, and applied them to charts and showed you. We demystified the whole magical time frame thing. We stripped it naked and we showed you it for what it is. That you get comfortable with a time frame because it speaks to you, but no one time frame is better than another. Obviously, the larger the time frame, the more information it's able to give you. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
I got all excited about trillion-dollar coin and...
It's all good.
Forgot you were there. So...
I am here. I'm still going. I'm still doing that that thing you transferred to me.
Oh, yeah. How's that working out?
It's going okay.
You can send it back if you need to, because I know you want to do the recap, so we can get rolling. Oh, coming up today, guys, 3 p.m. Eastern, Coach's Corner, right here. Today's topic is going to be on focus. That's with Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach. It will be held in this GoToWebinar room. When we're done with the radio show today, we'll simply put on some pre-recorded programming, and then we'll come back into the same room at 3 p.m. Eastern for the Coach's Corner. So when the radio show ends today, don't close the window. Just leave it open, enjoy the programming, and know that we'll be back.
All right, I'll transfer this back over to you.
Okay.
Just give me a sec.
Anybody have any questions on what I just discussed here on this daily chart? According to Rod, at current platinum prices, the trillion-dollar coin would weigh 26.4 tons. Well, here's the thing. It doesn't have to have $1 trillion worth of platinum in it. They can just stamp the face value of it as $1 trillion. But I understand where you're going. That's interesting. That at current platinum prices, to have a true $1 trillion platinum coin, it would weigh 26,404 tons. Have we got that much? I don't know. I don't know how much platinum has ever been mined or what proven reserves are. That's an interesting question. But yeah, they would just stamp the face value of $1 trillion. Now, how are foreign governments going to look at that? They might go, well, you know what? They're doing some internal housekeeping. It's not our business. But it kind of is, because we owe them a lot of money. Although, our government says, oh, it's not a big deal. Okay. I'm glad they're confident. I'm glad they're confident that it's not a big deal. Because I'm not. I'm not confident, so.
All right. I am ready.
Take it away.
All right, I will do that. Let me just move this stuff out of the way. Close that.
If you transferred that chat to me, I didn't get it.
I didn't transfer. We just ended it.
Okay.
Just finished it off. All right. You guys should be looking at my charts. You are. Excellent. Let me move this way over here. And that's it. I'm going to start the recording now. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Friday, January 4th, 2013. Let's start right off with the results, all right? We traded natural gas this morning because the gas came out. We were plus 6 ticks on the gas. We were even on the crude. We were plus 6 ticks on the beans. We were minus 8 ticks on the Russell 2000. We were even on the gold, and we were plus 5 ticks on the NQ. That puts us up on the week for our first three trading days for 2013. We're up $625 a contract for these 3 days. Okay? All right. Now, if you've not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. With the free trial, you get 5 business days in our live trading room. You also get access to Dwayne and I to ask any questions along the way if you want, to learn the setups while you're in the room, to download the indicators and the charting platform and use everything while you're in the while you're in that 5-day trial. All right. It's really pretty simple. All we ask for is your email, your name and your email address, so that we can send it off to you. All right. Let's see the trades that we took today. Well, before I get into the trades, I wanted to kind of go over a little bit of something that I said in the partners meeting last night. I think it's probably worth repeating. When, you know, I know a lot of guys out there that are traders, a lot of you folks who are traders or a lot of you folks who want to be traders, who are just starting into this or who have been doing this for a long time who haven't had success with it. You know, every time you go to sit down at your desk in the morning and you turn on your computer and you log into your charting platform, some of you may have fear at that time. You know, you may be concerned about whether or not you're going to make profit that day. You may be concerned about the choices that you're going to make and those sorts of things. Hang on. There's a little bit of a background in here. Not sure who it is, but...
I don't hear a thing.
Okay, I was just hearing a little bit of a... I don't hear it now. I think it's gone right now. But anyway, what I had said last night, when I sit down at my desk, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I don't think about whether I'm going to make profit or not. I just expect that I'm going to make a profit because the trading plan that I have works. It's worked over a very long period of time. And I just sit down at my desk and I do what I do. It's kind of like, you know, when I was a teenager and I worked in a mill for a little while, I had one thing that I did in the mill. I went to the mill every day. I punched my card. I went to my desk at the mill. I did my thing that I did. It was actually, I ran an extruder. But I did my thing, and I did it well. I did the same exact thing over and over again. And when I come and sit at my desk in the morning for the live trading room to start trading, I have the same mindset. I do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. I know exactly what I'm going to do. I sit down and I do it. The results, you know, the results speak for themselves. But I just wanted to put that out there. That's the mindset that you guys need to have. You know, if you're sitting down at your desk in the morning and you're worried about whether you're going to make a profit on that day, then you know you should be trading in simulated mode. If that's the state of your mind in the morning when you sit down to trade. All right. I think it's important to note that. Okay? You shouldn't be trading with live money if you can't sit down every day and be relaxed and say, you know what, I'm just going to do what I know how to do, and the results are going to be what the results are going to be. That's, just wanted to point that out. That said, let's get on with the results, all right? Today, yeah, today and yesterday, actually. Today started off great. Now, if we were just going for the equivalent of 2 points this morning, I would have been done in the first 10 minutes. I was up on gold. I was up right away. I was up 8 ticks on gold, and I was up 8 ticks on the NQ this morning. So, you know, that put me, what's that, up 120 bucks. So that would have been roughly 2.25 points ES equivalent. So if you're looking for the 2 points a day, then it would have been quick this morning. We, you know, because we do the live trading room, we continue trading all morning, and we ended up plus, well, I gave you the results. We traded natural gas, we're up on that. We gave back all the gold. We actually ended up a little bit more on the gold, and then we ended up giving it all back in a couple of trades, and we ended up break even on the gold. The NQ, we gave back a little bit of that. The Russell, we took a trade on that. We lost it. We took another trade. We were up almost to break even on the Russell, and I moved my stop to plus one tick. It came back and got me out of plus one tick. The soybeans, I took one trade on, and we got plus six ticks on that. I think I took one trade. I might have taken two, but I think I only filled on one. Crude oil, we were even on that. There were crude inventories out today and natural gas. That's why we traded the natural gas today. On natural gas, I was up seven ticks. Then I lost a trade, and I was down one tick. And then I took another trade, and I was up six ticks. That's how we ended up on the natural gas. All right. Now, let's go through it all. I'll start over here at the left, which is crude oil. For those of you guys who were partners, who did not make it into the partners meeting last night, we got some pretty good positive feedback on the partners meeting last night. It's already out there in the members area, so you guys can go review it. David, I don't know if you're here right now. Not David Williams, but David G., the partner that was in the room this morning, and he hadn't been in for a little while. He's not here right now. I was going to say go review number 92 and 93. All right, there's a lot of information in there. If you haven't looked at any of the workshops in the members area for a while, go review number 92 and 93. And there's a ton of information in those related to what we do in here in the live trading room every day. Okay. All right, so the morning opened up here at 9:30. There are opportunities right in here. I didn't even highlight them this morning on the crude oil. I was busy trading other things at the moment when they all happened. Right here was an opportunity on the long side. All right. And right here was another one. Just the up close right here would have been a spot to get long. After it topped out right here and it started to weaken, this is the trend line right here. So you would have, that's your trend line right there. You would have gone long right in here on this up close right here. That would have stopped you out with an 8-tick stop. So you would have had two wins and a loss, and then another nice win right here, and another one here, and another one here. So there was plenty of opportunity right there, and that was all in the first half an hour. All right, I wasn't trading the crude oil at the time. It was really odd today. Normally, crude oil is one of the first things that I jump into, but this morning, the NQ and gold were the things I jumped into right at the start. Crude inventories came out today. They usually come out on Wednesday at 10:30, but today they came out, well, this week they came out Friday at 11. And you can see that the crude went kind of nuts right here at 11, right here between here and here. All those bars are 1 minute. I'll minimize it so you can see between right here and all these bars all the way over to here. We're all in 1 minute. After that minute was done, there were a couple of opportunities here on the short side to take the crude. There was another one here. I did take this one over here. I ended up taking a break even on it. It went down as we expected it to. There was another opportunity right over here to trade it. Down below that trend line, there was another one right in here below the trend line too. But right there below that trend line, and it tanked. And that was pretty much it. Brings us to where we are now. And where we are now, let's just point it out. There's our trend line. And you would need to close above that trend line, which we have done right here. Now, the green line is into the cycle, and we've closed above the trend line. The swing high is one tick above here. So I would not recommend jumping in right here. I would say we may top out right here and continue going down. I would hold off on that trade right now. All right. That was crude. We were break-even on the crude. Okay. I'll bring the Russell over now. All right. Let's see. Here we go. On the Russell. Let me go over the setup here because it's pretty clear on the Russell. Okay, so let me just go over the setup for you. What you look for is a bullish cross of the MA1, which is this blue and red line right here, over the BBC, which is the green line. Once you get that, and I went over this yesterday with actual steps on it. Once you get that, you look for it to pull away from the BBC, then pull back down to the BBC with bullish divergence. If you have all those steps together and you get an up close, you can enter right on the up close, right? Clearly I missed that one. The next way to do it is if you have a lot of momentum in the market and price starts to pull back to the BBC and you either don't get divergence or you don't touch the BBC, you can draw a trend line down the bars like this. And when you get a close on the other side of that trend line, you can anticipate that the market is going to continue in the direction it was going. Okay? This was the first trade that I took over here. There were a couple of them on the way up right here. There was one right here. Right here. Okay? And another one over here. And this was the one that I took, and it stopped me out for minus. It actually slipped me a tick, minus 9 ticks. The next one that I took, there was one right in here, but I didn't take it. Okay, sorry, I just got a text. There was one right here, but I didn't take it. I missed it. It's not that I didn't want to take it, it's just that I missed it. I was doing something else at the time. And another one right here, I took this one, and I got long right in here. This took a long time for this to work out. I got long in here, and it went up here. I moved my stop to break even once we had closed up above the... Once we closed up above the MA1, I moved my stop to break even plus a couple of ticks, and it came back down and it stopped me out at plus one tick. That's how I got to minus 8 on the Russell. You can see that it eventually moved up, but it took a long time for it to get up here. I had put a target on this at 76.4 is where I put a target on this when I entered it, and it took a long time for it to happen, but it eventually moved up. All right, that was the Russell. Now let's do the gold. I took a bunch of trades on the gold this morning early on. Okay, I actually took one in the pre-market too. I'll show you the one in the pre-market before all the news came out. You can see gold was jumping all over the place this morning. Look at this on the at 8:30 when the employment rate came out, the unemployment rate came out. Look at all those bars were all from 8:30, 8:30 to 8:31. All those bars were in a minute. Clearly no way to trade that. But I did trade earlier on. Right here, we got long. We got long on the continuation of the trend right here, and we took 24 ticks profit on that. Now, that doesn't count toward the totals in the live trading room because it was not in the live trading room. All right, so let's get over here where the morning started off. Right here, there was an opportunity to get long right here and another one right here. We missed those. There was an opportunity to get short right here. You had the bearish cross, the space, the test of the BBC with a down close, and the bearish divergence. An opportunity to get long on the down close right there to, for that move down. It pulled back up, and there was another opportunity right here on the down close. It did not put in a lower swing. It did move down. It moved down about 6 or 8 ticks, and then it came back up through the BBC, giving a long opportunity in here. I did take this long opportunity. I took some profit on that one. I missed the next one. I took this one and ended up with a break-even on this. I got out a break-even on this one because the news was about to come out right here. All right, the news did come out, and it pushed it down all the way down here. Now, I shorted over here, and I took, I think I took a little profit on that, maybe a break-even. I shorted over here. I took a little profit. I shorted here. I took a little profit. I shorted here, and I gave some back. I gave back pretty much all the profit from these right here. I went long here, and I gave back some more profit. Then I went long again right here, and I got back to break even. All right. After that, I ended up missing a whole bunch of trades in here. No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I think there was 6, 7. I ended up missing 7 trades right here in this move right at the end of the morning session. Okay. That right there would have clearly put me way up on the gold on the morning, but I ended up break even on the gold. Right, where it sits right now on the gold, you don't have any divergence supporting any trades right here right now because we are looking on the long side, but we don't have any bullish divergence. What you would be looking for would be a close above this, an up close above that trend line. It's kind of tough, though, because without having any divergence down here on the slingshot to give you an idea of the range of the trade, you just have to look left, so you would think... An up close on that should push you up here to 46.1, and if it gets through that, it should push you up to 46.7. Okay? that is the gold. Now, let's look at the NQ, since that's the next one on the way over. All right. Here we go. On the NQ, as it opened up, there were opportunities in here that I missed right at the open. Right here, the test of the BBC with a down close. This would be the close down below the trend line, so right there was actually the first spot to get short. I shorted over here, and I took 8 ticks profit on that. I missed the next trade down. I missed that trade and that trade. And all these other ones over here, I missed them all. All right. When the news finally came out and the market tanked, I was doing something else at the time. I don't know what I was doing, but I missed this opportunity right here. It would have been a beauty. Then it went back up, and there was opportunity on the long side in here and there. Okay. It turned around and went back down. And I got short over here. There was one right over here. I tried to get short. Dwayne right here when we were looking at this, I think he had said, was it over here? Oh, it was over here. Yeah, it was over here, I think. Okay, so when price was up at 23.50, I think Dwayne had said look for it to get down, lowered down to 16 or something like that, and it got down there quickly. And there was another one that he had said over here where it got down there quickly. And then he had said another one, and I shorted it right here. The next opportunity I had to short, I shorted it. But while I was short the trade, you know, it went back and forth sideways here a little bit. And while I was short the trade, everything turned around and turned into a long opportunity, so I took three ticks stop on that. All right, and then there was a long opportunity in here. I didn't take the long opportunity, and I was actually at that point done trading with the NQ. All right, so I didn't take any more trades. I ended the NQ plus 5 ticks. Okay, soybeans right underneath the NQ, so I'll look at that one. And let's see on soybeans. This is the one that he said. He said soybeans were going to drop, too. This was another one that he said. When I say he said, I mean Dwayne said. Over here, when it opened up, he said you could almost sell the open because it's likely to go down on the open. I was looking for a shorting opportunity on the open, and we didn't get it right here. We did get one over here, but this was exactly the level that Dwayne said he thought it was going to go down to, 1368. And we did get another one right in here. I did short this, but I ended up taking a break even on it. And there were a couple more opportunities in here on the way down where you could short it, but this was the next one that I took. I took the down close over here, and I was telling everyone in the live trading room, look for the down close on the current bar. You can short that, and when it closed down, I did short it, and I took 6 ticks profit on it. You can see that it continued down, and there was much more opportunity there, but I was not in it. All right, that was right at the end of the morning session, so I took profit there. And what I want you guys to take away from this, what I want everyone who's in here right now listening to take away from this, is that I'm doing the exact same thing on every market. I'm doing the exact same thing. We're using the same time frame. We're using the same indicators. We're using the same setup. All right? Every single market that I'm looking at here, I know I've now looked at 5 markets I've looked at. On every market, we've done the same thing, using the same indicators and the same trade setup. So that goes right back to what I said at the beginning. When I sit down at my desk in the morning and I turn everything on and I get going, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm just going to sit here and do the same thing over and over and over again. That said, let's get over here to the ES now. I didn't trade the ES this morning, but we'll just take a quick look at it. On the 10,000 contract this morning, on the 10,000 contract this morning, we had a pullback down here to the YBR. Now, there was a question in the live trading room about not having the yellow brick road on any of the other charts, and I don't want to have it on the other charts because I don't want it to distract people, but on the 10,000 contract, when it pulled down here and it hit the yellow brick road, right in here is when the question was posed to me. And I said, well, okay, it's bouncing off a blue area on the yellow brick road. We should see it get up above this level, 1457.75. And it did. Once you put in that higher swing, the next pullback down to a blue area should put in another higher swing. And it didn't. That would make you think that this area right here is not going to hold. Okay? Then it got choppy in here. And now it has put in another higher swing. So if it pulls back down here to a red area, you would anticipate that it's going to move up, but I don't know. It's kind of choppy right here. Let's see. On the four tick range this morning, let's see if there are opportunities. It was a little choppy, but let's just go through it, okay? Right here, we needed to close above that trend line. We didn't get it. Over here, we needed to close below that trend line. There was a close right here. So if you took that close below the trend line at 55.5 with 8 ticks risk, you would have stopped out right there. Let's see. If you took this close below the trend line over here at 55.75, that one gave 1 point profit. So at that point, you would have been minus a point on the ES. Now over here, the trend line would have been right here, like this. So you would have needed an up close above this bar. So the up close would have been right there. Granted, this is after the morning session. There wasn't a lot of movement on the ES this morning, oddly. About 57.25, and it moved up to 59.5. So if you did the ES trades based on the same exact thing here, then, you know, you'd be up a point or so on the ES, all right? There just wasn't a lot of movement that way. On the other hand, if you bought the YBR here, looking for it to get up to the prior swing, then there was, you know, there was a nice 3 points right there. All right. Now, let's look at the natural gas, because I did trade natural gas this morning. Again, it's the same exact thing on natural gas as it is on every other market that we've traded. It's the same time frame, same indicators, same exact thing. The natural gas came out right here at 10:30, and the market started jumping around a little bit. I waited a few minutes, and then I drew a trend line, and I had bearish divergence, and I had a test of the BBC. So I waited for the close down below the trend line. I got short. I took profit. I missed the next one that closed down, and I missed this one also. I did take this one where it pulled back up, tested the BBC, and gave a down close. Now, I should have waited for the close below this trend line right here. All right, I made a mistake on this one. I thought, because I didn't notice down here that the cycle had turned blue. When it's blue like that, you want to wait for the confirmation below the trend line. All right, if it were still red, which I thought it was, then it's okay to take the trade off the BBC. But if you have the blue on the cycle like that and you're going short, you want to wait for the confirmation below the trend line. All right, I didn't wait, and I got stopped out for it. Now, when it did give the confirmation over here, I took that trade, and I took profit on it. Okay, I realized I had made a mistake here. I got out of the trade, and I took profit on this one. Okay, that was all I did on the natural gas. It's not all that there was, but that was all that I did. Let's see. If we look at it here, we had the bullish cross, the test of the BBC with an up close right here. There was an opportunity for a little bit of profit on the gas. Over here, by the time we got the up close, the black was on the green. There was no trade in there. Let's see, there was one right here on this down close right there. Okay. And see, nothing here because the trend line would have been going down like that. Over here, well, now we're well into the afternoon session here, but currently there would have been a spot right here you could have gotten long on. Okay, the trend line would have been right down here like that, and that right there would have been the spot. And that was natural gas. All right, there. That is everything I'm going to go over. I didn't trade anything on the YM. There was a little bit of opportunity this morning on the YM. I don't remember pointing much out on it, but there was just one trend line right there that I had drawn on. A close above that trend line right here was an opportunity to get long, and you can see it went up from there. Over here on the downside, you could have shorted right in there. Actually, that would have been the down close off the BBC right there. You could have waited for more confirmation right there. You could have shorted right there. Let's see, on the way down, test of the BBC, the trend line would have been drawn up like this, right in there, but you wouldn't have done that because the black line is above the green. That's pretty much it for the YM. You know, well, there was more of it right in here on the short side. Let's see, on the long side, you would have needed an up close. You would have gone this up close, right here. this up close right here. Depending what your risk was, 325, it drew down to 16. So it drew down 9 ticks and continued to march up, okay? You know, there would have been plenty of opportunity here on this move up as it started trending. All right. You can do that, Steve, but I prefer to just wait until the volatility slows down a little bit. The question was, have I ever considered changing the range to account for the volatility? Because on a 4-tick range, you know, it's going to bounce around a lot when a news event comes out for crude oil. You know, the crude inventories come out. It's going to bounce around a lot. It's not even tradable for about 2 or 3 minutes. You can do that. I mean, if you want to put like a 10-tick range on there, something like that, of course you would have to increase your risk with that. Your target would be bigger, but your risk would also be bigger. But I found that the volatility is kind of mindless volatility when things like the crude inventory comes out. You know, it just jumps around like crazy for a couple of minutes. The setups, in hindsight, the setups still work, but I don't feel comfortable taking a trade when there's just that, you know, that crazy irrational buying. Yeah, total knee-jerk. Now, this either, it's totally irrational, it seems. You know, if you go back and look at it, you know, let's look at crude when it was 11 o'clock when it came out. Now, right here, the setups are the setups, right? So, this is what you would have been looking at right there. All right, close up above that. That would have put you in all this up here. Then when it crossed down here, the close down below that is what you would have been looking at. Right there for a little bit of a short. Right in here, there was nothing. Over here, there would have been a little bit of a short. Right here, you would have gotten long. Let's see, there would have been a long right here. Yeah, I said that already. And short here, and this is where I started to pay attention to it again once it slowed down a little bit. All right, 3 or 4 minutes later, and I started to actually trade it right over here. Yeah, you would need to be quick. I mean, even if you, you know, even if you pump it up to, we'll call, you know, we'll just double it and go to an 8-tick, you'd still need to be quick, all right? And your risk would have to be twice as much. You can see right here, I had said earlier when I was doing the 4-tick range, we'll go back onto the 4-tick range, a close up above this trend line right here is what I had said, right? A close up above that trend line, look for it to move up. I think I had also said that that's not a trade that I would likely take because the green line is so close to the cycle and you only had a tick left to get up to the swing high. Was that on this market or was that on a different one? I don't know. We'll have to go back and look at it in the recording. But anyway, the close up above the trend line is the trade and that moved up nicely right there. Let's see. All right. That's it, guys. I'm going to wrap it up here. In the 3 days this week, we are up $625 a contract. All days were green days. We didn't have any down days this week. Knock on wood. but when I come in and sit down at my desk in the morning, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And that's what all of our partners should be doing. All right? There shouldn't be any question.
Very good.
All right, yep, let me wrap up the recording. Do you want to add anything, Dwayne, before I stop the recording here?
No, go ahead, wrap it up. We need to get moving.
All right, recording's done.
All right. Okay, guys, stand by. We're going to pause for a short station identification. We're headed out to Las Vegas, Nevada, to talk to Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com. And Miss Robin Dane, the trading coach, will not be here for this portion of the program, but she will be here this afternoon for the Coach's Corner. Be sure to tune in for that at 3 p.m. Eastern.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Twain.
Hey, David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
All right. David, did you hide the $1 trillion coin?
No, actually, I don't have it. I've checked my wallet, and I have a little coin tray in my home, and I checked that as well. Mm, okay. I haven't found it.
We're looking for it.
Yeah, all well, right. I don't blame you. Mm.
So what's going on in Vegas today? I'm sure it's a nice day, right?
Well, we would need Robin Dane to tell us what kind of day it is in Las Vegas. I don't know if she's here with us today or not.
She'll be here for the Coach's Corner at 3 Eastern.
Okay. You know, it's a little odd because today is Friday, and it doesn't quite feel like a Friday to me because we started later in the
right.
week, but it sure doesn't feel like Friday.
It's been a short
That's what
week.
I've got to say.
But tomorrow we're back to, I mean, not tomorrow, but Monday. Monday, all the holiday, well, no, because we've got a holiday coming up. When is the holiday, Michael?
I think it's actually around the 20th. It's later. It's the 21st, I think, is
21st?
When they're celebrating it this month.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is that they're celebrating?
Martin Luther King.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we get done with the holidays, and we get like one full week of work in, or maybe two, and then we get another holiday. So.
Yeah, I know. This is just holiday season. We'll get through it all. I'm hoping that we see a little bit more, although we've had a tremendous week in terms of for the S&P and for a number of markets, that the market's done very well and big volatility. But the kind of intraday movements, most of the stuff is happening on Globex, and the movements are very quiet intraday. Today in the S&P is a great example of what, you know, maybe is a 5 or 6 point range so far. So very limited range. We were able to get some trade off here just a little while back, which was nice on the long side for the test of going up to 59. But as a general rule, a 5 or 6 point day is a very narrow day in the S&P. And it means that if you're going to trade in a narrow day, you're probably going to have to keep your profit targets pretty small as well, because the market, until it breaks this range and really shows something, you know, you may want to take care of some other tasks or something, because it's really, really, really quiet. So I'm hoping that, and this is maybe partly due to the holiday, that we still are seeing, you know, people getting back from their vacation. Some people really do take the full 2 weeks off. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the people that are investment-minded traders and people in the various businesses, that some of them really take off all the way up until next Monday. But we've seen this kind of behavior before the holidays, so it's a little difficult to tell. We have had one of the most volatile weeks, having said all that, that we've had in many, many weeks. I'm not sure what the stat is. I haven't double-checked it. But this week may be bigger than weeks maybe going all the way back till 2011, perhaps. So I don't know the exact numbers, but it's a real big one.
What are you referring to now as far as
this week?
Okay, so you're talking about from New Year's Eve, Monday. And we're close.
Well, whatever the day is, just the range on this week, wherever you want to start at the week.
Well, I mean, you have to start the week on Monday, right?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, wherever you start it, it's just this trading week, as it's recorded, is about a 77-point week. It's a really big week. I don't think we've seen one of those for maybe as much as a year or longer. I'm not sure. So,
yeah, it's definitely big. I mean, New Year's Day alone, we had a low of 83.50. Well, let's look at the open. The open for the Globex session was 1388 and a quarter, and then we closed that day at 2375. So from 88 to 23, that was the Globex session on New Year's Eve, and then we were closed for New Year's Day, Tuesday. And so when the markets open Wednesday morning, they gapped up. Michael, what was it, 20, how many points?
Yeah, all of them pretty much gapped up 20
close
points or something.
Close was 2375, and then the open, from 23 to 43. So, yeah, so we had a 20-point gap there. So we had this huge day, Monday, which was a holiday. I mean, people probably didn't even think the market was going to be open. But it was. It was open the full session, I believe. So huge day right there. Then add on to that a 20-point gap. And then what we did on the first day of the year, Wednesday. Now, what we've done since then, as by comparison, has not been much. You know, we got that done in 2 days, really, Monday.
Yeah,
and
that's
Wednesday.
My point. Is that for trading purposes, it's been pretty quiet.
Right.
But this is the largest week we've had
probably
for a full
is.
Year. I think the last week we had that was bigger than this was the week of November 28th in 2011. So we've had a full year since we've seen volatility this big in 1 week. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, for those of you who want to check your charts out there.
No, I think you're right. In fact, I'm just going to let's see.
And that week of November 27th was even larger. This was a very powerful period. Let me double check this. What that week was?
I'm going to bring up a weekly chart. That'll make it really easy to see.
That was a 93-point week in November 2011.
That's a big bar.
So, yeah, that's my point, is that you've made it, is that it all happened in 2 days. We've had great volatility overall if you look at the week, but not so great if you're trading it intraday with ranges like what we're seeing here today. So let's see. If you want, we can take a quick look at what we have done today, which is important. Or are you adding some numbers up there, Duane? Are you in the middle of...
No, I was going to go to a weekly chart, but let's just go back to the daily here for now. Yeah, no,
okay.
I agree with you. I mean, this we can see it right here. This little... I don't know what days... This was a big day here. That would have been on November the 7th. I don't know where that fell into the week. But anyway, yeah, I think you're absolutely right as far as this being the biggest week trading.
Of the year.
Yeah, of the year, sure. I'll go along with that.
That includes all of 2012. And then the last one, again, was the week of November 28th. So it is interesting, and we've had a very powerful move up off the November bottom. We talked yesterday and several recent days about the turning point that we think is important in a number of markets, the January 3rd turn. And we'll go through and take a quick look at those today, where markets are with regard to that. But anyway, so with this week, you know, what's the fellow's name from the Squawk Box?
Ben.
Ben. Ben. Okay, yeah. So Ben was on yesterday, and cheerful little guy, Ben, isn't he? And I like his energy, and I like he's very upbeat usually when he's on, and he very honestly expresses what traders are thinking. And I think he said that, you know, his take on this is that many traders are surprised and caught off guard by this particular move up that we had in this week, and that sometimes technical analysis for them wouldn't work or would have to be thrown out in favor of news. And that may well be the case in certain conditions. I tend to think of it a little differently than that. I think in terms of if you don't understand a move, you simply don't understand the move. But it is technical. It didn't happen on its own without, you know, no move is an island. It's not something that occurs separate from the stream. It's still a part of the whole stream. And so we may not understand the move. We may not understand, we meaning anybody, may not understand that move. And I would want to say this to him, but at least, or if he had the interest in even discussing it, that I believe that many moves occur that seem out of place or don't fit in, but by the very nature of technical analysis, they are a part of the whole stream. And they don't exist by themselves separate from the stream. So it's something wrong with there's something wrong with the understanding. We don't understand everything, and so sometimes the markets simply move in ways that have a principle or something else behind it that we haven't yet fully understood, and it looks like it stands out like a sore thumb, and you know the market runs faster and further than most people think it would, and so on. So, and that we do have the, you know, we have the evidence of that right in front of us with this week. We had a very powerful advance. And I think how the market, I think January is going to be a very important month for the S&P, leading even into mid-January, even up to that close by, is going to be very important. I think we talked about yesterday, and I would like to repeat it, it's not a forecast, but I would like to see them get up to 1466. I think that would be a more important actionable level if somebody was thinking in terms of a little bit longer term, how they handle that level, because normally that's where they would want to go, and then we would talk about what we could do from that point forward. So we'll see. We'll talk about it as it occurs next week.
You use the term that no trade is an island, or no man is an island, or whatever it was you said.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, we don't see this too much or too often, at least not on a Globex chart, which is just a reminder, guys, whenever I have a chart up like this, unless I say some otherwise, it's going to almost always be a Globex chart. That's just the charts I run. But isn't this referred to as an island top right here?
It is referred to as an island top until the thing gets closed, the gap gets closed, and so on. And honestly, it's unusual in the S&P. That formation is unusual in the S&P. You do see it a lot in other commodities, but I think people who follow the S&P, particularly people who are following the S&P, including the Globex, you see that pretty rarely.
What do you make of that? Anything particular? Or?
No. And what I really was referring to, I think you, I don't think you're necessarily pointing that out because of the term about island, but I was, of course, referring to that whatever move happens in the market is connected to the whole market.
Oh, no.
It's
no,
not
I was
a,
just,
yeah,
no,
you
I
know
was
that.
Just, I was just saying, you know, because
the play on the word island,
exactly
right, because
right.
This is an island.
Yeah, exactly.
It is actually an island. And I guess, you know, for me, and I do look at candlestick charts, not really directly to read patterns. I know what the names of them are, but I do like to see some of the common things that many people like to see. I like to see where markets might, you know, go up and test an area and then close poorly or something like that. Just very easy to see struggle at an area, especially if that area is important, and especially if there's a important turning point, because important turns occur at important prices. And so in this particular case, the question is what do I make of an island? I don't know that I really think of this like what does this mean to me, because they gapped up and made an island. So I don't have a lot to say with that if you're asking me about the gap and what it's here. I think more important, at least from my perspective, is do we have a reflected wave top that's indicated? And we do. Again, we're back to the January 3rd thing we've talked about for the whole week here, which would tend to occur at an important price. And your chart shows there is an important price there that they've run into. So my belief would be that it would be difficult short term for the market to move beyond this level. We would normally have a multi-day reversal here off of this level. And I would say that even if we didn't have the gap and so on. So I'm not sure that I read much into the gap. I think many of the listeners probably have much better information with what, and you would too, perhaps, Duane, because you teach this stuff, what the gap really means in this case. Maybe that would be better for me to ask you, what does it mean in terms of candlestick? How do you view it, or how do you think it's viewed?
Well, you know, the gap portion in itself, I mean, that's a bullish thing. It's what happens after the gap. The fact that we have this little doji sandwiched in here, I don't have a clear-cut candlestick signal. I have like probably five or six go-to ones that jump out at me that really speak something, and this one doesn't really say anything yet. Now, if this third candle here in the pattern. If this were a bearish day and were to close anywhere near the low of the open that we saw on Wednesday, that would be a very powerful signal for me, and that would be very bearish, and I would certainly anticipate much lower prices, the gap getting closed, all of that. But the way it's coming together, I mean, if we close up here near the highs or even where we are now, I don't have anything.
Well, that's fair enough. I got nothing. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. It's, you know, you don't want to have to reach for it. You don't want to have to figure and work it out, because then you might be creating something that isn't there. That's why I always like the idea of just, you know, it's a form of self-honesty just to say, yeah, I don't really have anything here. You know, we don't have to make much more of it than what it is, and we wait until it is something that stands out and does something for us, you know, whatever that, in this particular case, with candlesticks.
Pete thinks it might be a hiding baby swallow top with a crouched tiger. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throw a flying
Hitachi
in there, and, boy, you got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, Pete.
It is kind of funny, and you know, one of the things that I think they did in Japanese candlestick charting, and this is just my opinion, but I think they wanted to identify as many patterns as they could, and honestly I think they overdid it a little bit. So in standard candlestick charting, I think there's a number of setups and patterns that are very good, but there's also a number of them that are them sort of reaching, because they want to try to turn everything into they, meaning the Japanese or the people who originated this. They're trying to do the best they can to come up with a pattern for just about everything. And as you know, each one of these things has different probabilities and so on. And they have to be taken into context as well. I think it would be important to know what the bigger and smaller pictures are when these setups occur. I don't think it's you know, should be viewed, here we go, as an island,
yeah.
You know, by itself. I think you have to include other factors, everything that you can include into it, to increase the probabilities of you having a good trade and a good setup for you. And I think the people that really do consistently well at trading, no matter what methodology, whether they use candlesticks or not, are always trying to do that. They're trying to not have to dig too deep. They don't want to try to create something out of nothing. What they want to do is see the something that's actually there. And when that is your leading guiding light, I think you're much better off as a trader than someone who's trying to produce and find yourself struggling to turn something that might not be much into something, so that you can then have a trade. And then that falls back on, and I don't want to trounce into Robin's territory, but that falls back on the idea that we have to make a certain amount of dollars per day. This is just my take on this. I don't like to think that way, because I don't want to have any undue pressure on me psychologically forcing me or pushing me, enticing me, tempting me to do something that I ordinarily wouldn't do if that pressure wasn't there. I want to just be able to relax and look at it and see if there's really something there for me or not. And I'll tell you, everybody knows when you do see something you like, there's no question about it. It's like, you know, how I hate to use these men analogies, but how long do you have to look at a woman who's attractive to you for you to say, hey, I really like that? It doesn't take very long. It's pretty instantaneous. And the same thing is true very much in trading. For me, is that I don't have to stare at it too long to go, wow, this actually, I think this is pretty good right here. I like this. And then when I have that under my belt, then I go, and now I'm comfortable doing the work, because I'm not trying to create something out of nothing. We've had that discussion so many times, but there's some new people, and it might be good just to repeat it once in a while. So I'm not a big fan, and not to discount anybody else's method or the way that they teach or anything, but I'm not a big fan of dollars per anything, you know, per day, per week, per month. I'm just looking for high probability trading setups, and it may occur every day, it may occur every hour, it may occur once a week, it may not occur at all in a single month, whatever it is, but I want it to occur. That's what I want. I really want to see something real, and I don't want to feel at all like I'm adding to it or putting some additional emphasis on something that doesn't really have it. So it's like hiring an employee. You know, somebody comes to your office or whatever, and you're reviewing the person, and you want to hire the right person. You don't want to add to anything. You want to let him tell his story. You want him to show you what his background is, and you want to make a judgment based on that. You don't want to bring too much of your own feeling to it, because you want to let him speak. You want to let him speak for himself, her speak for herself, that kind of thing. And so I'm doing that with the market as best as I can. And all of these ideas that I'm presenting right now have helped me personally, to get past a lot of the stuff that caused me so much grief, in my earlier trading. So, we've had this discussion many times, but I'm just repeating it. Everybody comes to the market with a different perspective. We certainly, totally know, completely know that everybody processes information differently. They get it in. Now, you know, when the information finally gets to that center part in your brain where the computing takes place, I think all of us are very much alike. The computing is numbers. It's math. And so we're all going to come up with our solution. But how it gets to that spot, what it has to go through, the little channels and passageways in our mind, that is very different. If I say certain keywords to Dwayne, those words may trigger certain things on the way to him processing it, and that changes the context and changes everything. Those same words may not mean anything to Michael. That might go directly to his processing center. So we all process different. And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because all of this is very personal to each person. But as a theme, I don't want to be adding too much to what the market brings. I just want to try to put it together as best as I can.
The thing about candlestick patterns is, where it differs from indicators like a MACD or stochastic, that's a measuring type of instrument, device, whatever you want to call it. But a basic candlestick pattern is nothing more than a graphic representation of investor sentiment for whatever time period you happen to be looking at. And so it doesn't become anything mystical, and that's why I encourage everyone. I mean, there's a couple hundred different signals, and no one can learn them all, or patterns, if you want to call them that. I don't really like the term signal. I think it's more of a pattern. But there's a few really important ones. Steve, the guy I've had on the show before, Steve Bigelow, who wrote the book, a couple books. He's got a new one out, actually. He was supposed to send that to me. But anyway, he narrowed it down to the 12 he thinks are the most important. And a lot of people who deal with who are big on candlesticks, they agree that, you know, there's like 12 major ones. Some say 10, you know, some have 5, whatever. You'll learn them very quickly, which ones are important that you see over and over. And here, you know, this was obviously a very bullish day. It opened here. It closed way up here. There's nothing more to take away from that. Was, wow, that was a great day for the bulls. You come into this next day here, and you've got this doji, which indicates indecision. I mean, price opened up here, ran all the way up to here, ran all the way down to here, and then closed slightly lower than it opened. So it creates a red doji. There's indecision with a slightly bearish overtone, and there's nothing more to it than that. And that's not making something up. That's not interpreting it. That's just what the candle says, is that it ran up here, it ran down here, and it closed in the middle. And so some would say that the market is balanced. That would be the term they would apply to it. And now today, you get an open that was slightly lower than yesterday's close. Just not, I guess they're about the same. Let's see. Yeah, right there. And we haven't been able to take out yesterday's high. And so where today closes will be an important factor in this pattern, if there's going to be a pattern. If there were a late afternoon sell-off, if somehow price were to get back below yesterday's opening price, which is the bottom of the red body on that candle, then this thing would really start to speak to me. It would be calling out, right now it's in a state of indecision, and it really could go either way. So, and again, that's just based on what's happening in the market. That's without applying any kind of technique or using any kind of an instrument to measure it. It's just, I don't know how to say it any better than how Steve wrote it in his book. It's a graphic representation of investor sentiment. You're not putting anything in there. There's no, it's just that simple. If I say any more, I'll take away from the simplicity of what I just said, so I won't say any more. Dave, back to you.
All right. You know, while you were saying that, I was just thinking a lot of ultimately you have to make a decision somewhere about what you think the meaning of something is, and you have to make a decision, well, I'm being short, I'm going to go long, or whatever. And I don't think there's anything wrong. It's very nice that it is pure up to a point. And I think the more important thing to take away from what you just said, Dwayne, is that you know the point that you switch from the purity of it to making a decision and making a judgment. That there is actually a line somewhere in the sand there that you can say, okay, there's these certain events that happened, and I judge that as bearish now. Mm-hmm. Now with this information, and these patterns are set up in the books to mean if this happens, you know, many times they'll say this can be a very bearish thing. Many people might look at the same pattern as an example that so far that we have here and say, you know, this is just a midpoint, that yesterday's candle is just a midpoint in a move or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a, that kind of thing. But I think it's important to know the difference between the purity of what actually is a fact and then how we judge it and we put it to use in our trading, because we have to take those facts and make a call, make a judgment at some point. But I like knowing there's nothing wrong with that, because that's how we trade. That's how everybody has to trade. You make your decision that a certain thing is likely to happen. As long as you know, it's really good to know, I think, the difference between the purity and the getting to the point where it really does mean something. Because, you know, this goes back to the Elliott Wave thing, where you've got three or four Elliotticians in a room, and each and every one of them has a different count on the exact same facts in front of them. And so I think the Elliotticians could use a little bit of knowing where that dividing line is from these are facts, and then this is my opinion about what those facts mean. Sometimes it all gets mixed in so deeply that they mistake opinion for fact. And if you do that, you'll find yourself in trouble in the market, because the market isn't telling you to go short. You're telling yourself to go short. The market is simply doing certain things that may mean that. In our work, at least with regard to a certain portion of it called roadmaps, we have decided based on certain principles that certain things, once they happen, actually have a meaning that to us is a fact. So we've tried to extend that, you know, beyond just, okay, here's a pattern, here's a thing, and we're trying to say, well, that's a fact, and so is this. So we're trying to stay with the facts as much as we can, and that is something that I think would be an interesting goal for people to reach, is that if you can extend the facticity of your trading and not jump later rather than sooner into the opinion, if as best as you can, I think you probably are sticking closer to reality, what's actually happened on the charts and so on. But be that as it may, finally in the end, you have to make the decision to be long or short. And, you jump from some form of mathematical or pattern purity into, yep, this is what we're going to do and this is what it means. It's taken me, for just speaking personally, it took me more than a decade just to get to a point where I could see that there were facts. I know it sounds idiotic, but it took me a long time to get to the point where I could see that something really is a fact in the market, because in the beginning it was all my opinion. Everything just quickly converted into, well, that my opinion is this. Well, my opinion is this, and I didn't realize that there's a fact independent of my opinion. That was actually a little miniature breakthrough for me. Like, hey, you know, my opinion is my own thing that I'm bringing to this. I jumped right at the start. Well, this must mean this. This must mean that. And you know, so we all go through our gestation period with this, and everybody has their own issues and problems. Some of us are just straight out gamblers, people who just cannot live their life without placing a bet. you know, and that's not a good place to be, as you know. So, okay, but other than that, I don't have anything else to really add to the S&P. We have about a 6-point range today. We have 59, of course, a number I told you yesterday that there's a 62 on the upside, and then the more important longer-term number is 66. We'll see if we get up 66 or slightly higher if we get up to that level. And then if you want, well, let's move on. Let's take a quick look around at the various markets that are trading today. Let's just take a look and see what little signals there might be.
Gold
in
took
those
a beating.
Markets. Gold has what?
Gold took a beating.
Gold did take a beating.
And with this talk of the trillion-dollar coin, you would think it might have had the opposite effect.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, the trillion-dollar coin,
yeah.
That's printing money out of thin air,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, historically that type of activity is bullish for gold. But today,
yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah, not so much. Our take on gold is nothing other than what we've been talking about for the last few days, that gold had a January 3rd top that it was going to create. It came one day early on January 2nd, and so this is a multi-day decline off of that. And we did break to new recent lows. We got down to 1626. And as we've talked about a few times, that the break of 1686, 87 was very important, and that we think still lower prices would be attempted before this decline is over. So we normally would, under normal conditions, we would go from a January 2nd top into a January 7th bottom here. So, you know, we had the 2nd came in one trading day early off of the 3rd, which we've talked about is important in a number of markets. So I don't have anything else to add to gold right now, but this will be interesting into next week because we are in the month of January, which we think is important for gold here. So we'll leave it at that for the time being. In terms of the close today on gold, I think a weekly close today below 1652, we're at 1649 right now about, would be the weaker position. Closing below 1652 would be the weaker position. So we'll keep an eye on that as well.
What was the low? What's the low this last year on gold? The low was
the low last year,
2012. The low, I guess, was 1538.
1526, or is it 15? Yeah, I think it might have been 1526. Depends on your continuation chart.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll call it around 1530. Okay.
Okay.
So
yeah, something like that.
All right. So we're still 100, give or take. We're 100 bucks higher than the low of
yes.
last year, which...
Yep, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, so let's see. Let's continue on here. We'll go through a few others. We talked about the U.S. Treasury bond market and the other day that there actually is a weekly bottom that we're looking for not to do anything with us until next week because lower prices would be indicated into next week. And so today they have made a new low. And that shows the value of knowing that you don't want to take that any signal except for off of the weekly for the time being, which is due on the week of January 7th, which is next week. So we'll talk about that into next week, but we were expecting somewhat lower prices. This, by the way, has been a pretty good decline in the bond market. This is the market that the Feds are going to attempt to hold up over the next year or so. That's what they're ostensibly going to do. This decline could continue and take us potentially into February, believe it or not. But that's why I want to see how we treat next week. Once the decline is over, though, like let's say we move down, maybe we get to the 142 area or something like that. We're at one. Hold on here. Where are we trading? We're at 141.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
We had a low today of 143.17.
Yeah. So if we get down a little bit lower, it'll be this
you
actually
are in the
will
March
be
March contract, right?
Yes, okay. March contract. This will be a very good setup for a larger trade on the upside. So I almost prefer letting this thing put itself in and being on the long side of this, because, you know, whether you like it or whether you believe in it or not, you know, you have the Feds at your back. You know, they are spending a lot of money on buying treasury bonds to try to keep the interest rates low. If you believe that they can do that, along with taking a good technical signal, you know, that could be something that could help you hold on to that position for a pretty decent move. So that's something we're going to want to keep an eye on as well. We talked about January 3rd for the euro. January 4th for the euro, that we expected the euro yesterday. We said to make a new low into today, and they have, and they're starting to firm up and put in some kind of candlestick formation, you know, whatever that is. We'll talk about that on Monday as a possible actual trade. You might want to look at your stuff, like we talked about yesterday, after this low is put in. And then crude oil.
End up being a hammer, you know, right here.
Yes.
If the thing closes up. In fact, now Jerry had just asked me when we were looking at the bonds if that could be a hammer there, and it could. And here, I mean, it needs to close. It needs to close up on the high. But this is the beginning of some potentially something very bullish here. If it leaves this wick extended down below it, so. Is that what you said? You're looking for potentially higher prices from here?
Well, we're looking for a bottom into the fourth.
Okay.
And today's the fourth.
Okay.
So we'll see how they handle it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that lines up well.
Okay, good. We'll keep an eye on that into Monday, and I think there's something to do with that. I was going to add a little bit on crude, that crude also has a top that would be due on the week of January 7th. You know, we originally had a roadmap that we put out looking for crude to advance from December up about 8 or 9 points total swing into January. And that has happened, and we haven't quite reached the number that we would have liked to have seen. We forecast $94.70. They got to $94.31 so far. And they're not doing badly today, and the move isn't necessarily over yet. January is very early yet, so we may end up exceeding that. But we think this is a very important thing that's happening here, and we think there's going to be big news associated with crude oil in the first quarter of this year, probably sooner than that. So and that news, of course, would be reflected in the movement of this market. And so we do have a roadmap out on that. If you're interested in seeing it, you can come over to pagetrader.com and sign up and check that out. This is a roadmap that I think would be worth taking a look at and trading. Okay, so let's see. We'll move on from crude. I have a few other little markets we can talk about. We don't talk a lot about silver, and today is no exception. so let's see. We had, you know, what does Bidu do? BIDU. What is that?
That's a Chinese search engine.
Oh, okay, that's what it is.
It's the Chinese equivalent of Google.
Okay, got it. And then let's see. We talked about the dollar. These are the markets we've been covering the last couple of days because they're all set up for these turns that we've been talking about right here. So I like the. Confluence of all these things. I think the word confluence is a word that was maybe first used by Steve Bigelow in his Japanese candlestick book many, many years ago. Because I do. I think that may be I can't be sure, but I think that may be the first time that word was used. Because I remember him using, I believe I do,
Are you talking about Steve Nissan or Steve Bigelow?
Oh, Steve Nissan. I'm sorry. Steve Nissan.
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you. Steve Nissan, the inventor of the little car, the Nissan.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
He
was good. I drive one. Yeah.
Cocoa. You got anything on cocoa?
We talked about cocoa yesterday, and we're thinking that we may see a continued advance. I'd like to wait and give them into early Monday. They've already done. What worried me about cocoa a little bit is that they've already made the minimum move they were supposed to make to 22.81. They got to 22.80 or a day back, And that is a sign of weakness if they just go right to exactly to the number. So I'm going to, you know, today they're down and I'm going to wait, but we may have something on cocoa on the long side into early next week. So let's give them, because of what they did yesterday when we first spoke about it, they went, we didn't publicize the target, but they went within one tick of a target. And not being able to get any higher than that means there's still a selling pressure there. So today reflects that with the down move. So I'll wait until Monday to do something. We normally would expect a reaction anyway, but they had a pretty good one on the downside here. So the idea of the trade, though, just so you know this so we can repeat it, the idea of the trade for crude would be for, not for this week anyway, it would be for an up move starting next week up to 22.95. So that's where the idea for the trade came from originally, is that we're looking, hey, if we get something that shows us the long side is starting to firm up, then we want to be long for cocoa, moving up into the week of, again, you know, we keep mentioning the week of January 7th, and so keep that in mind. We'll talk about that next week, because that's really what it is, the week that it's referring to. And let's see. And
there's
then
a question on corn. Got anything on corn? March corn?
Just butter, actually,
butter?
And salt.
A little salt?
Yeah, butter and salt. How about you?
Salt.
Anything?
Yeah.
Anything on your corn?
No, I take mine raw.
Just raw? Okay.
Yeah, I just walk in the field, break it off.
Mm-hmm. We talked about corn, and although this is a forecast, but it's really not something that we indicated to trade. Corn had made a bottom on the weekly chart on September 24th, this was a reflected wave of 2012, the week of September 24th. And since then, it acted relatively normally and then started really from about the week of maybe October 22nd and started to show what I would think is unusual behavior. And on a couple of occasions, we've talked since then that the market really should go down and test at least $6.76. And the market has been slowly, and now in the last 5 weeks, has finally gotten into a decline, and the recent low is 680. So we've come within about 4 cents so far of completing that. I think they will complete that or further, considering the unusual move. But this is a natural level that would be hit in this time frame. So they're running, they're attempting to complete that. It's not a trade that I would take. Like I mentioned yesterday when we talked about it, that's not a trade that I would want you to take. Now, a trade I would want you to take, and that we did talk about anyone taking, is the forecast for the January 3rd bottom in natural gas. And we said yesterday that it occurred one trading day early on January 2nd, and so long positions would likely be indicated. And we're having a pretty decent up day in natural gas today off of that bottom. So, you know, you can always go after the fact and find, oh, here's a good spot, you could have gotten long, and here's this and here's that. But in reality, you do have to act at sometimes without all the setups and everything being perfect. You just have to act because the market sometimes, the time has run out on the downside. And today is, in fact, the one day late. So January 3rd was the on-time day. The second is when we said we thought it was very likely yesterday that it, or the day before yesterday, that it came in on the second, and so on. So we're having a nice move up here. So nothing to add to that other than we didn't trade it ourselves. We just saw it, and it's just one of the many markets that had the January 3rd turn that we've talked about. Let me think if there's anything else.
The only other question I have, the only other market I have in here, if I missed a market, guys, if you ask about something and I didn't bring it up, type it in again. But there's the Aussie dollar. Boy, there's a gap close right there.
Yeah, one last thing just before we switch to the Aussie, I just want to say, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but in spite of the fact that we're advancing on natural gas right now, generally, I would be expecting lower prices into February. So, in other words, this bounce that came in off the January 3rd bottom, which occurred one trading day early, this bounce would normally be followed by further decline into the month of February. And so, with prices lower than we have made so far, you know, something like, you know, the 298 level or something like that, somewhere below where we are, coming into February. So what that tells me is I would be looking to sell important rallies at important price levels for further decline. and we'll address that next week as well. Now, if you want, let's take a look at the Aussie dollar, and thankfully, we don't have to talk with Robin about soda today. Good Lord. I'm just joking. Okay, let's get back over to the Aussie. Let me find it here. I didn't see it today. What is it doing? I'll find it here in a minute.
The Aussie dollar, 6A?
Yeah. Here we go. Okay, yeah, I don't have a lot. We've been, if we're anything on the Aussie dollar, somewhat bearish on the Aussie dollar. Let's see. That would be our position on it, but I don't have an actual trade just at this moment, but the idea would be that we were somewhat bearish on it from last month. So we did, if you take a daily chart, they had a decent decline from the December high, and that was part of what we were looking for. They've had a counter trend bounce, and now they're reacting. I don't have an actual trade for it, but that was our general outlook, was that December would mark, and we talked about it on the program, December would normally mark a top for a continued move sideways to lower. Now, we don't trade the Aussie. I've never traded in it, but we are watching it, and I think that that would be the case for this, given all the other factors. So if you want, we'll address this next week as well. Do you have any outlook on it, Dwayne, that you want to add to this?
On the Aussie dollar?
Yeah.
No, not really. I don't follow it very closely. I just notice here that, you know, as with, it seems like all markets, caught that gap up on, you know, we saw it in the ES, it's in all the markets. This one has actually come back and closed the gap. Other than that, no, I don't.
Yeah. Now, you know, just that whole thing about gap closing, a lot of, again, this goes back to, would you consider that to be a random thing, that markets go back? And I certainly don't. I think that that's a thing that happens more often than not. Are all gaps closed? No, actually not. There's some gaps that have been left open for the last 70 years, to be honest, and it's true. From where the stock market was, you know, in the 1930s and so on.
Right.
But the majority of them do get closed. And quite often they get closed relatively quickly. And a whole technique, there's a whole, literally a body of work in technical analysis that you could say it really addresses gaps. Mike Reed has a number of some work that he does with gaps, which he's talked about on the radio program. So there's quite a bit. You know, gaps themselves can have meaning, and they do technically, as a fact, they do get filled the majority of the time. So, you know, we don't have to get into an argument over the randomness and so on, but that's a very classic technical, what you just put up on your chart, that's a very classic technical thing, that the market runs down, closes the gap, and then reverts back to higher prices. I mean, how many times have you seen that? More than once, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So there you are. Boy, and the S&P is just as, you know, quiet as a mouse here.
Let's go back to the S&P. That's daily. Let's go to an hourly. Put it in perspective. Reminder, guys, at 3 p.m. Eastern today, Robin will be here for the Coach's Corner. Today's topic is focus. You don't have to do anything other than just leave this room open. When we close the radio broadcast today, when we finish, there'll be some recorded programming for your listening pleasure, and then we'll be back live at 3 Eastern with Robin for the Coach's Corner. So come, bring your questions. We would love to have you with us. Okay, here's an hourly chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is the gap open right here that we had when we opened Wednesday morning. We gapped up here. This gap is bigger, if I'm not mistaken, or almost as big. Let's see. The gap is that big. And this week's range is... Okay, so this week's range is a little bigger than the gap. But not by much. I mean... with, yeah. See what I'm saying, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Right here, this little square represents how big the gap was, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one, we had one big hour in the week there, and then just really quiet, sideways trading for 3 days now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it looks holiday-ish. It really does. It, even though, the big move has already happened and we've had a huge week up, it's not been this big for a full year. But for the actual ordinary day trader or person watching the market, it really has. It's been very, very quiet trading, very much like holiday. And they have no problem. It seems like the market's very comfortable at these levels. They're certainly not struggling here. I wouldn't look at this and say, boy, they're sure struggling, you know. And I think that's everything that we have, Duane, for today.
Okay, Dave.
I think that's it. One last quick thing, just to throw it out there. We talked about Apple, and Apple also had the January 3rd top. It came a day early on the 2nd, selling off and so on. If people, anybody who would like to learn what we're doing with these turning points, we do have a webinar coming up next Tuesday. You can sign up for it simply by coming to pagetrader.com and going on to the Traders blog, and it'll have a link there. You click there, and it has a link.
I'll put the link in the chat room here.
Okay, I appreciate that. And
I just want to bring up this Google chart.
You get
quick.
A chance to see what we do with these turning points and how and why. I believe they're very, very useful in trading. I certainly have a great deal of evidence that they are very useful in trading. So if you'd like to come, it'll be the webinar is 15 minutes after the S&P closes on Tuesday, and we'd love to have you there. And you don't have to pay anything. Just take a listen and see if it's something that might be useful to you in your trading, because all of the turning points that I use on or have given out, I mean virtually all, there's a few that have not been reflected wave, but the vast majority, like 98% of all the turns I've ever given out on this radio program, have all come from this one technique. So you're welcome to join us next week to see that. What were you saying, Duane?
I was going to bring up a chart of Google and Apple, but my little stock platform chart is not working properly.
Okay.
Oh, there it goes. It just had a momentary glitch of sorts. Okay, let's see what we got. Okay, Apple really tanked today. Remember, guys, we talked yesterday. I showed you that thing we had said to watch for 575 or the 50-period simple moving average, whichever came first. And this 50-period simple moving average came first right here. And now look what's happened. This thing's really tanked off of that. Now, Google, let's go look at that one and see what happened over there. Okay, here's Google. They're having another up day. What was it you had said the other day about Google? Who was it? Iris had a question. I didn't catch what David said yesterday. He skipped over to Apple. Did he ever get back to Google? I don't remember what
he
said.
Well, we did. We talked about Google. Google also has the week of January 7th top. So Google, there's two sets of turns. There's daily turns that are across a number of markets for January 3rd, plus or minus a day. Plus, there is the week of January 7th, independent of that, a completely separate set of turning points. The bond market and a few others all have that lined up, and Google is one such stock. And we did talk about it earlier in the week for Google, for the advance into the week of January 7th. So what we want to do with that is allow either be in it or allow it to complete that move up and then take action if you're a trader in the stock. And remember, this is a very high-priced stock, so if it does move, you can win, quote-unquote, or lose more money in a high-priced stock like this than you would in a low price. So you have to have all of your skills in order, including the ones where you know how to protect yourself and be wrong gracefully and be imperfect so that you don't throw too much money at it. Because Google can have swings of $150. So No joke. I mean, the low that they made on June 11th of last year, the weekly bottom at 556, they had one uninterrupted swing up to 774. That's $224. If you're a person who doesn't like to take a loss when the market has shown you that your original idea was wrong, and there's nothing wrong with that, what's wrong is staying wrong, then you would have to sit through that type of drawdown. So this is a stock that can do that kind of thing. So you want to be very careful and have all your tools, meaning all of your skills, up to par and sharpened to trade in this, because it can be a very rewarding stock to trade in. It really is. And, you wait for your setups, and very quickly this market can get underway, and it'll surprise you how fast it can move $50. So there. So that's the answer to the question is for next week, the week of January 7th.
Okay. All right. Now, there was a question from Jeanette who asked, you guys keep talking about a gap. Can you tell me what you're talking about?
I can send a picture over of my teeth. I have one, right? Look at this right here.
That's where you do your shopping. That's where you buy your clothes, the gap.
That's right. Well, we can play with that all day long, but she's asking a serious question.
Unless he's going somewhere important, and then it's the men's warehouse. But mm-hmm. Okay. Right here, Jeanette, on this candle, you can see this on this day, which was November the 16th, the closing price for the session was $13.5350. Now, that was on November the 16th, when the market reopened on November the 19th. So what that tells us is this was a Friday, because there's 2 days here, Saturday, Sunday, because we go from November 16th to November 19th. The market opened at $13.7050. So price closed at $53.50. It opened the next session at $70.50. So it gapped up, off the top of my head, about 17 points. Over here, price closed Monday at $14.2375, and then when the markets reopened Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. Chicago time, price opened at $14.43. So if you were long at the close here, when the market opened on Wednesday, you went, wee, because you made what appears to be effortless money there. The market just, boom. Now, David, you might have some better explanation of how that happens, or if Bert's hanging out, Bert, you might want to pop in, of how that can happen, why that happens, what the story is behind that, why do markets gap up or gap down?
Well, in the old days, what's the woman's name that asked the question?
Jeanette.
Okay, so thank you for the question. In the old days, markets gapped all the time because there wasn't really much of a Globex or overnight market. And by the old days, I mean like in the early 1990s. You would find out that the overseas markets had moved up or down, and then you would look at our market and you see a big gap up or a big gap down. The gap, what Dwayne just described, meaning the difference between the price it closed at and today suddenly it opens at a much higher price. So nowadays we see, because of Globex, you can actually see much less gap, because Globex is a overnight market that we can all trade in here in America, where we couldn't do that before. If you wanted to trade what was happening in the overnight markets in Europe, you had to trade in Europe back in the early 90s. Now we have Globex, which allows us here in America to take advantage of the movement in those other countries by trading the reflection of those movements in our market. That means that if Europe goes up or whatever, then our market tends to go up as well, and we can be in the market and trade that. Maybe there's news or something in Europe. So we don't see gaps as much as we used to because of the Globex, the overnight ability to trade it, but they still are a part of our market, and sometimes we still have a big gap. That's an unusual one where he has the circle right there. That's pretty unusual to see that anymore. So you won't be dealing with gaps that much anyway, but it is good to understand what they are, and it's just buying pressure was strong enough to have the market open substantially higher. But because we can, you know, trade in Globex, we can actually get on board if we're up, I don't know, at 2 in the morning or something, as opposed to sleeping and wanting to get in when a lot of these moves happen. Because at 2 in the morning or at midnight here, it's prime time trading in Europe. So I don't know if that helps,
Day, now what you just said is absolutely true. On an ordinary day, these happen to be unordinary days in that this is a Friday.
Yes.
So there is no Globex trading between here and here. This is the Sunday afternoon open on Globex right here. Here's the Friday close, the Sunday afternoon. And so that might, I can see where that could easily be confusing to folks, not just because you're new to the markets, but just, well, wait a minute. Okay, they lock the doors here. Okay, nobody's allowed to trade here. And when they open the doors Friday afternoon, okay, see, the price of admission to be in the E-mini club was here. Then they lock the doors, and somehow, some way, by Sunday afternoon when the markets reopened and ordinary folks like us are allowed to participate or trade, they have come into an agreement that the price of admission to be in the E-mini club should be up here. Same thing happened over here. Prices closed Monday afternoon, New Year's Day, right here. When they reopened at 5 a.m. Chicago time, Wednesday morning, somebody somewhere had agreed that the price should be substantially higher, and suddenly it was. Now, it's a little baffling when you think about it, because it's not like when the market opened, it suddenly ran up there really quick. It actually opened there. I wish Bert was in here so he could jump in and weigh in on this. Are you there, Bert? Are you on the phone? Can you pop in? Let me shoot him a quick text and see if he can pop in. Are you there? Okay, let me spell it right. Because I don't know that I can add any more to it than other... Because I just have to, you know, go with what David has said and with what I've said and what I see in front of me on the chart. But I do think there should be... Somebody needs... somebody's got some explaining to do.
Mm-hmm. Any
thoughts on why that happens?
Well, there is buying pressure reflected in the number of orders that are accumulating in the system, and that buying pressure literally places the market at higher prices, even though it hasn't traded there yet. There's a lot of orders stacking up. People place, you know, buy limits, any number of things. There's pressure in the system. It's not balanced.
But when the market's closed, you can't place an order.
Well, if the market is closed, you can't place an order, but the market will, at the very split second of opening, there's an inrush of orders because people are trading right at the open, and the market can't trade anywhere but where it opens at. The people are already bidding it up to those prices. The fact that it closes at a certain number does not mean it has to trade at that number on the open. We know that on the open of the next day.
Right.
So that gap is instantaneous buying pressure being released. The market actually is trading higher because of instantaneous buying pressure in the market. And, you know, some people would say the market has no memory and it doesn't remember where it was, and we don't have to get into that. But the fact is that where the market closes doesn't mean that it has to open there. There is instantaneous buying pressure right at the open that can push a market higher or lower. And generally, as a very general explanation, again, when European markets and other markets have gone up or down, our market tends to follow. And so there's a lot of buying pressure right at the open. You know, the order flow, if you look at the volume of how order flow runs, there's normally a very, very early session peak of volume. It opens within the first hour, the volume peaks, and then it wanes off, and then at the end of the day, you get a second wave just before the close. And this is true across all markets. You'll see that this is a basic principle of all markets with regard to volume.
Well,
it's very useful.
Now, Jeanette, you ask who benefits. Well, anyone who is long when this session closes benefits when it gaps up. If you're short when this session closes, you don't benefit. And if it gaps down and you're short, you benefit. So just going to show you what David was talking about in regards to volumes right here. See, here's volume. You can always spot, you know, the open or the close. That's where the big peaks will typically be. Like, well, see, when we opened Wednesday morning, that big gap up.
It hadn't peaked yet, yeah.
Yeah, that thing didn't peak until way up here. That's kind of unusual. Well, the thing is it opened at 5 a.m. Chicago time. So what we see...
Yeah, you here, have a Globex. That's a Globex,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is Globex, 24-hour, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when the market opened. It closed. It had a normal close on Monday afternoon, and then it was closed on Tuesday, and then it reopened Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. Chicago time. Mm-hmm. And this is the closing price, opening price. And Bert is not there. Okay. So, all right, anybody else have any other questions we can cover really quick for you before we go? Oh, Bert's there. I'm back. Hey, Bert, can you pop in for a minute?
Yeah, what's up?
We had some questions here about the gap and gaps, how they happen, why they happen. Like here on Monday, price closed here. And when mm-hmm. the market reopened on Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. Chicago time, mm-hmm. there wasn't a huge surge of volume or anything. Tell us in broker speak, please.
Okay.
How that happens? Who gets together behind closed doors when the market is closed and no one's allowed to put any orders into the system? Who decides that we closed here, but we're going to open way up here? Can you tell us how that happens?
I would just say, in simple terms, it's just the number of buyers and sellers. I don't think there's a group or
there's no conspiracy.
Council. Yeah, I mean, it's just
okay.
You know, it was news driven. It was bullish. No volume, so it's not unusual to have unusual spikes like that. And, you know, there's not a council that really says anything, hey, this is where fair value should be.
It's those LIBOR guys. They're doing
that. That's the LIBOR guys, right. Mark would get that.
Michael has asked this question twice, David. Do you use candle confirmation in executing a reflected wave trade?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Bert, if you address that.
I do. I mean, when David suggests, you know, a top or bottom at a particular market, I'll use, we could be centered around a major moving average. We could have a bullish hammer like you talked about earlier, any kind of reversal pattern. So I use David's work as kind of a secondary tool to my work. You know, I'll confirm it. If he's looking for a bottom, you know, take, for example, the euro currency. He had a potential daily bottom scheduled for today. You pulled up a beautiful, what could be a bullish hammer. That's, like you said earlier, Dwayne, that's the hint that we could be, that reflective wave bottom is taking course or taking place. So I guess the easy answer was yes, as a confirmation.
Mm-hmm. And I do, if somebody's asking me that question, I don't name the pattern. I don't say, oh, this is a dark cloud cover or a, you know, because that actually requires three bars. But I look at it, and there's certain key things that I look for, because if I'm going to go short, I do want to see the easy and the obvious. I want to have a market, in most cases, act poorly at a level. The markets can be tricky and sometimes can give you a very bullish signal right before they turn bearish, and that can be more difficult to trade. I've seen others take trades off of those signals and say, no, I think this is a fake out type of bullish move, and then I'm going to go short, in spite of the fact that in candlestick it looks real bullish. But, you know, be that as it may, I think it would be fair to say that I'm looking for some of the same things. I don't necessarily name them in a particular way, but I know what I'm looking for at a particular level. Just the general idea that the market is struggling at a level or has made several attempts to get through an important level and so on. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. And I do look at candlestick charts. My whole, everything I do is on candlesticks, not in the sense of candlestick pattern recognition, but just because I like the ease of reading a candlestick chart. If somebody puts up in front of me a regular bar chart, you know, it's almost like I don't even know what I'm looking at. I have trouble with that.
You just said it very well. Because what I said earlier is that a candle, the art of reading candlesticks, if you want to call it that, that candlesticks are nothing more than a graphic representation of investor sentiment at any given time for whatever time frame you're looking at. You just said, you know, I look at them and I know what I'm seeing, but I don't hang a name on it or a title.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All some people did who came before you was, and I'm speaking to the group as a whole, as whoever came before you, they said, okay, these certain scenarios repeat themselves in the market over and over. So when we see this scenario repeating, we can actually give it a name. So whether you give it a name or don't give it a name, what you're still seeing in a candlestick is price opened here, it put in a high here, it put in a low here, and then it closed here. If it closes higher than it opened, well, that's bullish. And if it closes lower than it opened, that's bearish. If it closes a lot lower than it opened, that's really bearish. If it closes right around where it opened, then that is, some would say indecision, others would say balance. Either way, it's not making any kind of a definitive statement. It's neither bullish or bearish. It's just in the middle, which is what a doji is. It looks like a cross. So, let's see. Now, Gary put in a comment. I don't know,
Dwayne,
Gary.
Can I go back to the gap?
Oh, sure. You bet.
This is from Mark Greenstein. Mark, you know, David knows Mark. He's a reflective wave student, but also Mark is a CTA.
Mm-hmm.
He is a commodity trading advisor with Orchard Grove Asset Management. And here was his explanation, because it was real clear about the gap. He says, all markets go through a pre-open auction. So before they open, there's a period of time that orders can be placed. We all know that. They are then cleared to determine the opening price. So that's more of a clear and precise,
that is,
professional answer. And that's the type of person.
And
Mark,
we would expect nothing less from Mark.
Yeah, from Mark, from Orchard. So.
Okay, very good. All right, well, I hope that answers your question, Jeanette. And anyone else who has questions about that, that's the skinny.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'd like to wish everybody a wonderful weekend, Dwayne and Michael and Bert and all the questioners. And we appreciate the questions, of course. I think next week, and I'm hoping next week, is going to be a much more active, even though we had a big bunch of moves. A lot of these things happened on the overnight, which leaves us not able, all of us, necessarily to get that and trade those. So I'm looking for a better week next week in the markets with regard to the ordinary session that we all trade, the 6.5-7 hours a day that we trade. And there's a number of interesting things, and I do think the volatility and the news is going to play its part in the month of January and February. We certainly have had big volatility, which we talked about coming into, we thought was going to occur in the early part of this year. We're certainly seeing that, even though it's not that easy to trade. We're sure seeing that. And listen, if you are new to trading and you hear a term and are not sure what it means, you ought not be at all concerned about asking the question, because all of us had to ask the questions at some point. All of us started the journey saying, you know, what is a market? What is a chart? What is all this?
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing wrong with asking that question. And in many cases, you'll find that if you ask the question, go through the little typing thing and ask it, you can get an answer that can clear it up and put it, you know, it puts it to bed for once and for all. You won't have to have, you know, lingering doubts about something, because that's something that has happened to me, is I didn't really understand a lot of things until much, much later. And it's nice that you can ask a question and get a direct answer. And if we don't have every last detail, then we get Bert Schlichter on from Daniel's Trading, because he knows everything.
Yeah. Well, if I don't, and I'm not clear about a lot of things, there's enough guys in the room that we have. You know, Mark is a good resource. We can always reach out to him and Ben on the floor and
mm-hmm.
and Robin. And there's guys in the room. I see familiar faces and stuff. So, you know, mm-hmm. we got enough guys.
Yep. Yeah, any questions okay, you well, have good. About well, something, guys, always don't ever hold back. Just type it in, because if you don't ask, you won't know. And so ask. We encourage that.
There you are.
And be sure
thank
to come.
Thank you for...
Yeah,
for
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say thank you very much. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. And, Duane, I'll see you, Bert, and the listeners next week.
All right.
And we'll see you then.
All right, Dave. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. See you guys.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you.
All right. That's going to do it for now. We'll be back 3 p.m. Eastern for the Coach's Corner with Robin Dane, the trading coach. Today's topic is focus, so I hope you can join us. Bert, thanks for popping in and sharing that with us on the Gap. Appreciate that. Good information. And I hope you have a good weekend as well.
You too, Duane, and the rest of you guys.
All right, guys. It is the weekend, so be sure to spend some quality time with your family. Of course, I'll see you all in church on Sunday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Duane Reeves, his co-hosts and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.